No doubt it's one of the best fields in golf, and it just so happens to be a pro member in South Florida. Tiger Woods teeing it up as part of the Seminole Pro Member today. The golf world wondering, when will we see Tiger next on the PGA Tour? How about the start to the Florida swing for sweet swinging Joe Highsmith? The second year PGA Tour pro made the cut on the number and then took it deep on the weekend to get PGA Tour win number one. Highsmith now with a tee time in the season's first major, the Masters, this April. Plus, it's API week. The biggest names in the game will be at Bay Hill to honor the King, Arnold Palmer. You know this week is going to be a grind, just the way he would have wanted it. We're going to share our favorite memories of AP coming up as Golf Today starts right now.
Golf Today.
How good is this? We're spoiling you, golf fans. We have live golf this Monday coming up with the first round of the Darius Rucker Intercollegiate beginning at 2:30 p.m. Eastern. That's right here on Golf Channel. Top women's golf teams competing over 54 holes for the title. So we got the next couple hours with you from our Golf Channel Worldwide headquarters. Sitting on the desk, I'm George Savarikas. Pleased to be alongside Rex Hoggard for this Monday edition of Golf Today. Rex, this is a fun time of year with the golf calendar once it flips to March and we're in the midst of the Florida swing.
I know everyone's cold right now. I get it. No one wants to hear about golf, but you saw those visions of Long Cove Club in Hilton Head where they're playing the Darius Rucker Intercollegiate this week. We're going to be at Bay Hill this week in the Seminole today. You cannot get three better visions than that.
It's always fun when the Seminole comes around to see which pros are in the field, what other big names are part of it, which members are in the mix. We got Tom Brady, the GOAT in the NFL. He's playing. Nelly Korda, as good as it gets on the LPGA Tour. USGA President Fred Perpall, Colin Morikawa, Justin Thomas. How about that name, bottom right? I'm skipping bottom left with Rory McIlroy. Going to bottom right there. Oh, Tiger Woods will be playing today before we'll potentially see him tomorrow with the TGL. So, Rex, what do we take away from Tiger Woods playing, if anything, in the Seminole Pro Member?
I'm not sure you can take away much. Seminole Pro Member is a lot of fun. Guys look forward to it. We had Brad Faxon last night on the podcast with myself and Ryan Lavner, and he talked about how important this is to any pro, not only those who live in South Florida, obviously, but there's so much history, and you do want to be involved in this particular event. But when it comes to Tiger Woods, he's playing with Seth Wall, the former CEO of the PGA of America. I think it's an opportunity for him to go out and play a really cool golf course, which we all want to do. But yeah, if you're going to take anything at all from it, it's a good sign that Tiger Woods is at least playing golf. He talked about it a few weeks ago that following the tragic death of his mother, yeah, he really wasn't focused on golf very much, and understandably so. This, I think, is an indication maybe he's trending back, getting focused on it again, obviously with an eye towards the Masters.
Yeah, if you have to go hunch, you think hunch. Masters is the first time we see him, or any chance he surprises people and maybe decides to add the players?
I think it's a possibility. I think it depends entirely on two things. One, where his health is, and I think, again, today's probably a good sign that he can get out and he's moving around, and where his game is. He hasn't spent a lot of time, his words, not mine, working on his game the last few weeks. So if he feels like he's up to it, TPC Sawgrass, it's not an easy test. You don't want to show up rusty, but I think it would be a good move on his part, going into Augusta, get some reps under his belt, but it's been about 5 years since he played there, so I'd be pretty surprised.
Yeah, if the body and the mind are willing and able, then the players could be a fit. My lean is that Augusta National will be the first time we see Tiger inside the ropes on a professional event this year. How about the week that we saw at PGA National Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches? The final margin, 2, for Joe Highsmith to now become a winner on the PGA Tour. First player in 9 years to make the cut on the number, go on to win. Third guy so far this young season to get their first win on the PGA Tour, Thomas Dietrich, the WM Phoenix Open, Brian Campbell the week previously. So back-to-back weeks, we had a first-time winner on the PGA Tour, and he sets a new tournament scoring record over at PGA National. Here's Highsmith on getting the victory.
Did you say the Masters? Yeah. I don't want to break any protocol. I'm not sure if I've officially received an invite. Oh, did this go out?
You're good.
Is it still good? But yeah, that's the one. I mean, Augusta National is a place that has a really special place in my heart. I've only been there a couple times as a spectator, and I was able to play, fortunately, with a couple members last year. And I mean, it is just like the most incredible place on earth. And I went last year to the tournament just as a spectator, because I just, any chance that I can get to walk out there is pretty, you know, I'm going to take advantage of that. But to be playing in that tournament is going to be very special, and you know, something obviously you work towards your whole life, but you never really know when you're going to get that chance. And it's pretty sweet for that to be coming pretty soon. And then obviously, you know, the schedule changes will be great. It's an extreme advantage to be playing in those elevated events for how much money and points those guys get to play for. So you know, fortunately was able to get into those for the rest of the year, and hopefully I can play well. And but it'll be great, I think, to get out and play with, you know, some of those guys. A lot of guys, you know, those best players in the world, I don't really, especially last year and even this year, don't play in the same events as any of them. So it'll be pretty fun to get to compete and kind of see how I stack up with some of them. And just to get like that schedule will be really ideal. And you know, a lot of other things that come with the win are pretty special, but certainly Augusta's number one by far.
Augusta has to be number one, but then the other operative word that Joe Highsmith said, it basically setting the schedule now going forward, getting to play in the events where you see the stars of the PGA Tour teeing it up. It's a life-changing final 36 holes for Highsmith.
I don't think there's a better phrase in all of golf than going from patron at Augusta one year to player the next year. Imagine making that move. I just think it's an amazing thing to be able to say. And you look at it, you and I cover enough golf. We're reporters on the road. These are the type of stories I think both of us love to tell. Because coming into the week, you would have not expected this from Joe Highsmith. The fact is he had to make a quote-unquote sketchy five-footer on Friday at the 18th hole just to even make the cut. And I think it shows how special the game can be. But to your point about the schedule, before now, he had played in exactly one major championship and zero signature events. Now he has everything ahead of him. He's in the Masters. He's in the rest of the major championships. He's in all of the signature events this year. When we say life-changing, sometimes I feel like we do it a little loosely. This is obviously life-changing.
I remember talking last summer with Andres Gonzalez, played on the PGA Tour a number of years, does some broadcasting now for ESPN Plus as part of PGA Tour Live, plays a lot of golf with Joe Highsmith, live in the same area in and around the Seattle suburbs. And he kept telling me last summer, he's like, this guy's a really good ball striker. Once he figures it out, he's going to be good on the PGA Tour. But you get through the Wyndham Championship, he was 160th in the FedEx. He had one top 10 at Puerto Rico. Beyond that, hadn't really cracked an egg. And at that juncture, and I remember talking with Joe over the course of the season, you get more comfortable. What's life like on the PGA Tour? A lot of guys, there's that learning curve. Everything's so new. You're going week to week. Where do I stay? What courses fit my game? Where can I even get in as a rookie? The fall, he goes on this run, has a couple top 10 finishes, three T11s to wind up finishing 110th in the FedEx fall. Then you can breathe a sigh of relief. Then the belief becomes, I belong. I kept my card my first year on the PGA Tour. Now year two, I need to build off of that. And he did that in such a big way. And we saw the strengths of his game, really. It's his iron play and tee to green. And this guy had the horsepower to not only chase down Jake Knapp, but to close 64-64. That's a statement. That really shows, okay, when I'm firing on all cylinders, I can chase down probably just about anyone. Like, he has to feel that way after getting that first win on the PGA Tour.
And you talked about his ball striking. Clearly, you look at it statistically, he is right there among some of the game's best on the PGA Tour, but it was his putting that stood out to me. For the week, he finished 7th in the field putting last week, which that really pushed him over the top. 231 feet of putts on the weekend. That's almost as much as he made in four rounds the week before in Mexico, where he finished tied for 17th. He had a solid week. So that was the outlier. If he can find a way to build on that, he could be in store of a very special season. And he's qualified right now for the Masters and the PGA Championship. You think he would obviously make a run to get into the two Opens as well.
Yeah, and don't sleep on the players. And he's inside the top 60 in the world golf rankings. That top 50 cutoff will loom large for guys coming up as we embark on what is considered championship season on the PGA Tour in the world of professional golf. So let's continue the conversation with the Golf Today Roundtable. We welcome Golf Channel senior writer Ryan Lavner and GolfDigest.com contributor Shane, Ryan, Lav, let's start with you. Joe Highsmith's win. Was this as much about what he did on the weekend as what Jake Knapp didn't do on Sunday?
It's always both in this sort of situation, isn't it, George? I mean, you look at Jake Knapp. He had the 59 on Thursday, but the rest of the tournament, he just shot 3 under par over those other 54 holes. It was clear he didn't quite have full command of his golf swing. The error that he made into 11, slight miss hit, he said, with the pitching wedge, and then made the mistake you can't do, missing it short, then not extricating the golf ball out of the mud, and ended up making a triple bogey there. This is to take nothing away from Joe Highsmith, because obviously this was incredible play on the weekend. 64-64 is going to win a lot of golf tournaments. But to me, this showed the importance of the cut line and why cuts matter. You look at Luke Clanton, needed a cut to get his PGA Tour card, was able to do that, obviously, and ended up having another top 20 finish on the PGA Tour. Joe Highsmith needed a 5-footer on his 36th hole of the tournament just to play the weekend. Cuts matter. They're important. They add urgency and importance into the whole PGA Tour dynamic. Joe Highsmith, I think, is living proof of that.
Shane, you're a storyteller. The story last week was about the two sides of PGA National. Were you a fan of the softer side of PGA National that we saw for the first two rounds?
No, of course not. Of course I wasn't, Rex. Right. By the way, my camera is so fuzzy right now. I promise you I'm going to fix this next time. But
please do.
No, I didn't, of course, you want the bear trap. If you see a bear in a movie, what do you want the bear to do? Play with a little beach ball or attack somebody? You want it to attack somebody. You want carnage. You want carnage at the bear trap, right? I mean, that is kind of the gimmick of it. That is kind of its brand. So, look, I know they did the rye overseed and it made things a lot easier, but it wasn't quite as fun, you know? And I think already there's a huge difference between PGA Tour events that have the best players and PGA Tour events that don't. And the ones that don't have them, they need a little bit of novelty. Phoenix has novelty. That was really fun, even though it wasn't a signature this year. I think at the Honda, or I'm sorry, whatever it was called, whatever it's called now, I think you need the bear trap to show its teeth for sure. So I wasn't a fan.
The Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches, the new moniker for the first stop.
So sorry.
On the
so
Florida
sorry.
Swing. I will forgive it this time, Shane.
Thank you.
One of the subset storylines, Luke Clanton, becoming the second guy to get his PGA Tour card through the PGA Tour U accelerated program. A colleague of ours may or may not already be saying that he should be on the U.S. Ryder Cup team. And we're just into the month of March. When you look at recent collegiate players who have had this transition to life on the PGA Tour, what are appropriate expectations for what Luke Clanton's going to do beyond this college golf season?
Well, I don't want to lump Luke Clanton into just some sort of category as these hotshot college players who are then going to make it out on the PGA Tour, because it's clear that he's special, right? Like, the speed is incredible. His iron play last year was off the charts. If he had enough rounds to qualify, he would have been third on the PGA Tour in strokes gained approach. He seems to be holding up and reading greens and navigating golf courses that he's seeing for the very first time. And you look at the results-wise, I mean, 6 top 20 finishes since last summer. That's more than most PGA Tour players have managed over that span. But what I think makes Luke Clanton different and why I think he can have success right away on the PGA Tour once he turns professional after the NCAA Championship in late May is that the success that he has had has sort of created a sense or an aura that he already belongs on the PGA Tour. And I think it's that comfort and that confidence that really sets apart this generation of players that we really hadn't seen over the past decade. And I think Luke Clanton really epitomizes that.
Shane, we just had a conversation about Tiger Woods playing today, Monday, at the Seminole Pro Member, which is kind of a charity event. What do you take from that, if anything, about his future competition-wise?
Well, I think from how he plays at Seminole, we can, you know, exactly telegraph how many majors he's going to win. Now, you know, look, it's a pro-am, right? You're probably not going to see any footage of it. I think Tiger right now, we go back and forth. We talk about him like he could win another major. And then the next day we're talking like death is at his doorstep with its big sickle ready to, you know, be the Grim Reaper. I think it's probably in between that. But, you know, Seminole's always a really fun kind of sub-story each year. But I wouldn't want to obsess about Tiger's results there and try to prognosticate. For that, let's take something really serious like TGL.
Shane, how dare you say we could ever be prisoners of the moment based on some very small sample size and then extrapolate the rest of a guy's career? That would never happen right on Golf Channel. We're halfway through our Golf Today roundtable. We still have more to come in the show. We're just getting through some of the topics, including maybe Jordan Spieth's reaction to not getting a tee time at the Arnold Palmer Invitation.
If you're in the market for a podcast, be sure to take a listen to the Golf Channel podcast with myself and Ryan Lavin. If you miss any of Golf Today, check out the Golf Today podcast, which includes the best interviews from our show. And be sure to subscribe to the Golf Channel YouTube page.
If you have any hesitancy, you at least get a sneak preview with Rex and Lav right now as we're continuing our conversation with Ryan Lavner and Shane Ryan. Guys, we got to get to the quotes from Jordan Spieth after what he did this past week, second top 10 finish so far this year, but didn't get an invite to Bay Hill at the Arnold Palmer Invitational. So Spieth said after his round in regards to not getting a sponsor's invite, I'm bummed not to be there next week. It's been a great, great place for me. He's had two T4 finishes at Bay Hill in his career. I really wish I was getting that start, but I needed to play better injured golf last year, comma, I guess. So how do you read between the lines there, Lav?
Look, I certainly understand Jordan Spieth's frustration because this is the situation that the PGA Tour created with these limited field signature events. You know, they're supposed to be these star-driven showcases, and I would argue that Jordan Spieth right now is probably the third biggest star on the PGA Tour behind only Tiger and Rory. And so you've got these star-driven showcases where you're trying to ensure the best players are all together. And there's a massive importance in getting in those events and in gaining points. But it also creates a scenario where is it then going to be a popularity contest? Are tournament organizers going to be judging who writes the best letter to sort of lobby for themselves for a sponsor exemption as well? Like the easiest solution to this, if you're the PGA Tour, is to either put a cap on the number of sponsor exemptions you can receive per season in a signature event, whether it's two or three, or don't have them at all. And just have these special invitation events where the best players in the world are earning those spots and not necessarily be given those spots. I think that would sort of eradicate the entire issue.
All right, Shane, I'm going to bring you in on this as well because I do find it interesting because this boils down to meritocracy versus marketing. Do you want the biggest names to come to your tournament to give it a higher profile, or do you want to award players who are playing well? I've been on both sides of the fence on this one. I tend to agree with Lab that we probably need to limit these sponsor exemptions in the signature events, but where do you stand?
As far as I know, and what I've heard from people behind the scenes, is that there are three players right now who, when they're in contention, boost the ratings and get everybody interested. One is obviously Tiger, two is Rory, and three is Jordan Spieth. This is still one of the biggest names you have. He's one of the more compelling figures. Come on, give the guy a break. Yeah, okay, it hits at the meritocracy a little bit, but earn your way in. Look, Bronny James got drafted by the NBA. Sometimes we must kowtow to the realities that are before us. And so I think Spieth has done enough. I think he is good enough for you from a marketing perspective that it's kind of crazy not to give him a sponsor's invite. I mean, look, I don't think Spieth is ever in danger of going to live, but you also have to think about, you've got a competitor right now. Shouldn't you be keeping your stars happy? I know I sound like a Spieth apologist. I am to some degree, but I just think there are certain guys, and there are not many of them, like I said, but that Jordan Spieth is one that kind of surpassed all this stuff, and he does deserve special treatment for me.
Spieth going to live would be the ultimate heel move, like an NWO defection. But yes. But I get what you're saying. You want your stars to play. I just hate the expectations of an invite when it's completely at the sponsor's discretion. Lav, let's pivot over to you. A couple different topics. I'm going to let you kind of choose your own adventure here. You want to talk Xander Schauffele and his return or Keegan's comments from a week ago regarding the Ryder Cup? What interests you more?
Well, since I don't think that Keegan's comments on Full Swing were controversial at all, I think I would pivot to Xander Schauffele. I think he's the biggest question mark this week at the Arnold Palmer Invitational. He told Xander Schauffele, did Today's Golfer late last week, that he has still been on a ball count, and prior to last weekend, he had not played a full round of golf. Guys, the Masters is roughly 5 weeks away, and you have the world number three saying that he's not quite playing competitive golf yet, just 18 holes. And so I'm very curious to see what he looks like this week, very curious to see if he can get through 72 holes of competition, curious to see if he has any setbacks, because rib issues can be very tricky. We had Brad Faxon on the podcast last night saying that he, you know, he suffered this injury very similarly 25 to 30 years ago. He's still feeling it today. And so you don't want Xander to rush back, have a setback, and then it sort of endangers the heart of this competitive season.
All right, Shane, on a scale of 1 to 5 on the concern meter, it sounds like Labs is about a 2.5, 3 when it comes to Xander. Where is your concern level when it comes to Scottie Scheffler coming in as the defending champion at Bay Hill?
Wait, can I go back and pick Keegan Bradley? Do I get the same?
Sure, yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
I'm just kidding. No, I think Scheffler, it's kind of funny when you look at the last 2 years. The only time he's mortal is when these outside things happen to him. It's like he's unstoppable, then he gets arrested, right? Or he's unstoppable, and then he cuts his hand with a kitchen knife or something like that. So I just think it's a funny angle. Like there, it's almost like the universe is saying, look, he's just too dominant. We need some parity in golf. So, you know, tomorrow he's going to get struck by lightning or something like that. No, I'm not concerned at all about Scheffler. He's proven over and over how skilled he is. And he's right there, too. I mean, there was a press conference a couple tournaments ago where he finished second, third, or fourth, and he's acting like it's the end of days, right? I just don't know where my game is, blah, blah, blah. It shows you how high the standard is. And I think with Scheffler, a guy like that, it just takes one little thing to click. And he's so smart and he's such a hard worker that really I wouldn't be concerned. I would still, you know, gun to head, they say, if you don't pick the Masters winner, you're gone. I'm taking Scottie Scheffler every time.
I am too. We have two of the game's best golf writers on right now, Shane and Lav. And I do want to point out that the GWA, the Golf Writers Association of America, announced their writing contest winners today. And among that list is our very own Ryan Lavner. Congrats, Ryan. It was a story on Bryson DeChambeau, his star is reborn, that was following the U.S. Open. Congratulations. I'll give you exactly 5 seconds to give your speech.
It's certainly a great honor. Shane's one of the best in the business. Everyone on this list, I certainly don't just appreciate, but also admire for the work they do. So this is a great honor. I really appreciate it.
All right, wrap it up. No, congrats, Lav. We're all proud of you here, and it was great to see your name on that list.
Thanks,
Joel Beal twice? Joel Beal twice? What is this?
Demand a recount.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Appreciate it.
And stay with us. Florida Swing continuing this week as the game's top players coming to Orlando. It's the tour's annual event honoring Arnold Palmer. Gary Williams joins us after the break with his memories of the King.
Welcome back to Golf Today. This week, Bay Hill hosts the Arnold Palmer Invitational presented by MasterCard. This is the fourth signature event of the season on the PGA Tour, and coverage begins Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Golf Channel.
Yeah, signature week, meaning many of the game's top players coming to Orlando as they do each and every year for this annual event honoring Arnold Palmer. It is one of only two current PGA Tour events named after a former player. So what's the second one? That would be the CJ Cup Byron Nelson in Dallas. This is the ninth playing of the event since Arnold Palmer passed away back on September 25th, 2016. That was just 2 weeks after his 87th birthday. Our colleague at Five Clubs host Gary Williams shared so many special moments with the King through the years, and Gary joining us now. So Gary, always good to catch up with you. What does this week on the PGA Tour schedule mean to you?
Means a great deal, George. Good to see you both. You know, look, I think his spirit is very much alive. And to see those photos, George, you were in the room. We flew up together on that charter up to La Trobe to spend time with him on his birthday that one particular year. Look, I think that he was such a powerful force that even in his absence and in his passing, we still feel like he's there. I wish he could be there because since his passing, I think that this golf course and the setup of the golf course is exactly the way he wanted it, which was arduous and stern, and an examination that would require the best player to clearly be identified at the end of the week. And look, I think it's wonderful that these players who still make time to go up to his office, that is still appointed and curated in a way that you think he's going to walk around the corner, makes it what it is, which is a representation of a man who dedicated his life to giving everybody who had that moment with him, and you guys saw it hundreds of times. He never let anybody down if they were going to get that moment, whether it was 7 o'clock in the morning, 7 o'clock at night, whether it was walking out of the restroom or walking to the first tee. He was going to deliver the handshake, the smile, and a sense of warmth that made you feel your total worth, which was an amazing skill that he possessed.
Gary, I think you're with me. This Wednesday, Bay Hill Wednesday, was always the highlight of the year for me because the king would sit down and do the state of the kingdom, so to speak, and he would talk for over an hour and answer any question that was thrown in his direction. Why was that important to the game of golf?
Because I think that he was from a different time, a time that it wasn't necessarily something where you pause to think about, well, you know, is it going to be my best interest to say this or share this? He was unvarnished. And I think that that was something that was always true of him. But at a time, especially in his advancing age, where social media was becoming so prominent, that people pause. They have a governor. They're hesitant. They're not nearly as transparent. He was always transparent. And I'll never forget, guys, and I know you'll remember this. This was after Rory had ascended to world number one, and he had yet to come to Bay Hill, and sitting in the old Golf Central studios, and this was what he did on that Wednesday at Bay Hill. He told the truth, and he said, if he doesn't come this year, I'm going to break his arm. And he didn't mean it, but he kind of meant it. And Rory coincidentally didn't come that year, but he did come, and they developed a kinship before Mr. Palmer's passing. So Rex, look, that hour was something that scribes, whether they were young people or people who have been covering the game for 30, 40, 50 years, cherished, because he knew the value of the written word. He knew the value of the messenger. And he had such great respect for the people who covered the game that you knew that you were going to get the most authentic, valuable hour you could possibly get.
We've all been fortunate in our careers where we've covered the Arnold Palmer Invitational, and we were on site when AP was roaming the clubhouse and holding court and had this aura that would follow him, not just that week, but year-round at Bay Hill Club and Lodge. Gary, for those who haven't experienced what it was like on site, for the casual fan, what was his presence like, and how would you describe Bay Hill?
Well, I would describe his presence, George, as so approachable for somebody who was one of the most famous people, not just in golf. He was a cultural icon. And the idea that when he was walking around, that he was unapproachable, on the contrary, he was the most approachable person living a life that required him to always be on. And the thing is, George, is that he had, again, this warmth about him. And I was sharing this story this morning that even his last year at Bay Hill for the Arnold Palmer Invitational, he would ride around in a golf cart that was not that unusual. But what was kind of odd, but it wasn't because you guys knew him, he had his bag on the back of that cart as if, you know what, who knows, they may need me. Or there would be an emergency nine over at the Charger that he would go and play at the end of the day. Nobody loved golf more than him. Golf gave him the life that he led, but there's so many people, they do it for a job. Golf was the lifelong love affair that he had. And I will share this one story. The first time I ever spent time with him at Bay Hill, I had just been at Golf Channel for less than 2 months, and Matt Hegarty asked me if I would go over and host this fireside chat with him. And I said, are you kidding me? And it was a USGA event because he's one of only a handful of people who've won three different USGA championships. It was a member dinner. So they had played golf. And so I came in, I sat at dinner with him and Kit, Dal Finsterwald and his wife. And so we had a nice chat, but I had never really been around him at all other than one individual handshake in 1995. And we went to go and walk up onto this little podium. And he turned to me and he said, how you feeling? You feeling all right? And I said, yeah, I'm fine. And he said, well, just remember, they're not here to hear you. And that was his way of diffusing any tension that I might have had. And he also, by the way, had been alerted that my father was terminally ill. And again, we had not spent any time together. And from that moment forward, he looked out for me in a very personal way. But that little anecdote of him saying, you know what, I'm going to do what I do to everybody, make him feel comfortable. And that's exactly what he did.
Gary, quickly, and you had mentioned this, how we did that trip together up to La Trobe, and you would do the sit-down interview with Arnold Palmer, and then the last couple of years of his life, I ended up getting to do that same sit-down, and it was 2 weeks before he ended up passing on his 87th birthday. Was chatting with him. He knew he would have his cart there, and there were four or five people around it, and I'm waiting to do the interview, and wanted to be polite, so I said, "Hey, Mr. Palmer, how you doing? Stand off to the side." And after 5-10 minutes, he looks at me and he goes, "George, are you just going to sit around and let them BS all day, or are we going to do this interview?" And he still had that disarming personality where he could kind of crack the joke, have you in on it, but also let you know, like, "Hey, let's knock out this interview. We also have some business to get to, Gary."
George, that was it. Like, yes, he had to pick his spots. It was definitely twilight. I think all of us kind of knew that. But again, nobody who came out of Central Casting was better equipped to be golf's first television star from the moment it happened in the late 50s to the end of his life in 2016. When that moment came for him to do that interview with you, he could have been idling the whole day. "Put the camera on and I will deliver for you." And that's what he always did.
Gary, we have seen this. Ricky Fowler does a really good job of projecting the modern version of Arnold Palmer. But given that we're getting a generation removed from when he was important, the main focus in the game, why is it important for his legacy to endure?
It's an excellent question, Rex. I think because he was the first person, along with Mark McCormick, and obviously he was also managing at the time Gary Player's affairs, Jack Nicklaus as well, but Arnold was truly the biggest star. He was John Wayne, he was Steve McQueen, he was Clint Eastwood wrapped into one, is that these individuals are brands now. We call them brands, but he never lost sight of the fact that he is not anything without those fans and without the sense of responsibility and also a healthy dose of gratitude for what the fans, sponsors provided to him, provided to his event. And I think sometimes now when we cover the sport, we look at players and they emote a body language of either obligation or burden. I never, ever felt that he emoted either one of those things. It was responsibility, humility, and a sense of flattery that you want my time and that you think my time is valuable. And I'm going to give you my time and I'm going to give you all of me. And those are the types of messages that I think need to go forward. I don't care if it's this week or 50 years from now, that yes, they're big stars because of their performance. But the sponsors and the fans who support those products of those sponsors are the reasons why that platform exists. He helped create the platform.
Yeah, you can take a lot from the game, but Arnold Palmer made sure to give back even more. And the shared experiences that we had with AP, Gary, memories to last a lifetime.
No question.
All right, good to be with Gary Williams here on Golf Today. As we go to break, we're going to celebrate the life of the king and what is set to be, as it always is in its own unique way, a special week at Bay Hill.
We're back on Golf Today. Before this week, the biggest shot of Joe Heisman's career came in the semifinals at the 2021 NCAA Championships when he was playing for Pepperdine. From the fairway bunker to the green on 18 to win his match and send the waves to the final, Pepperdine would end up winning the following day.
How good is that?
Now, Highsmith is accustomed to pressure-packed moments throughout his career, and that continued last Friday at PGA National when he made the cut with this quote-unquote sketchy five-footer on 18. He entered the weekend 8 shots back of the lead.
So you think, okay, made the cut on the number. Maybe he plays well on the weekend. He could have a top 20 finish. Highsmith had a different idea. 64 on Saturday, 64 on Sunday, gets his first win in his 34th career start on the PGA Tour. 17th player to earn his first PGA Tour win at the Cognizant Classic, 5th in the last 7 years. We've been wondering, last 4 instances dating back to 2010, if guys to make the cut on the number go on to win. It happened twice in 2010. Rory McIlroy and Carl Pedersen, and then you had Brant Snedeker, 2016 Farmers Insurance Open, and Joe Highsmith nearly a decade later, winning the Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches. Time now for the Comcast Business Tour Top 10, which rewards consistency and reliable play throughout the season. And how about that move from Joe Highsmith? 113 spots. That might be the biggest jump I've ever seen on our Comcast Business Tour top 10 graphic as he is right now in that 10th spot. Ludvig Åberg currently occupying number one. Right now, we're joined by two men who have covered Highsmith from college and beyond. Steve Rutkowski, Brentley Romine, Burko. Joe Highsmith, we know he was a stud during his days at Pepperdine. Took a little while for him to get comfortable on the PGA Tour, but since last fall, he has really been ascendant the past 6 months.
It really has, George. And as we know, it's never a straight line. There are peaks and valleys. And I go back to 2021, the NCAA championships at Greyhawk. Joe Highsmith on that Pepperdine team, it was deep. They went 7, 8, 9 quality players. He didn't even tee it up in the first round of stroke play. He got subbed in the second round, and the rest, shall we say, is history. But Joe Highsmith in the semifinals of match play that year at Greyhawk hit one of the very best shots I have ever seen in person. The fairway bunker on 18, 189 yards out, hit an 8-iron, water all down the right side in front of him. It's a world-class shot. They ultimately prevail, win the national title the next day. But that week in particular, I just said he was subbed in for the second round of stroke play, and to his words, played miserably. He and head coach Michael Beard of Pepperdine spent the night on the putting green, well into the 9:30 range. The sun was down. It was completely dark. And Michael Beard told me yesterday, because you heard Joe tell Damon Hack on the broadcast after officially winning down at Cognizant, I stuck to my process. Well, what was that process? They figured it out after round two at Greyhawk, that Joe would put so much pressure on the shot, the end result. Am I going to make a birdie? Where is it going? And on that green at Greyhawk that night, Michael Beard conveyed a simplified message that the process is give yourself a grade, a numerical value, the process before the shot, and then the process of actually committing and executing the shot. He said, 1 through 10, I want a number immediately. Don't worry about where it's going. Don't worry if I'm going to make birdie or maybe you're short-sighted and you're going to make bogey. So that is a deeper version of the process that we hear so many players say. And he told Damon Hack, I mean, that is getting into the weeds, but that is the Joe Highsmith process. And also in the broadcast, Dan Hicks talked about how poor of a warm-up session Joe had on the range Saturday before the third round, where he ultimately shot 64. He got in touch with Michael Beard. He said, Coach, I've got nothing. And he said, remember the process, free yourself up, get a clear picture. And he said, that's the only way I can go right now because I feel as if I have nothing. Well, you know what? He freed himself up. That picture was crystal clear as he shot a couple of 64s on the weekend and became a PGA Tour winner.
Brentley, our colleague Ryan Lavner was seething with jealousy yesterday when you actually pointed out that Luke Clanton, who actually earned his PGA Tour card by making the cut last week at PGA National, you went on Twitter and you said that he could actually be a pick for this year's Ryder Cup team. I'm going to give you the floor to justify that.
Well, Rex, I mean, what fun would it be to not go and stick your neck out there and offer a hot take? And I thought it was kind of a lukewarm take, but I guess I may be mistaken. But when I think about 2 years ago with Ludvig Åberg making the European Ryder Cup team, he turned pro in June. At the time, he had only made 5 total starts between the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour and had 0 top 20 finishes. Luke Clanton's going to turn pro this summer with 12 or 13 tour starts under his belt after he plays the Valspar and at least 6 top 20s, including 2 runner-up finishes. You look at the pressure of this PGA Tour U accelerated and playing every week on the PGA Tour, playing for a PGA Tour card, playing for your job. Luke Clanton is, he's not only had unprecedented performance on the PGA Tour, but he's going to turn pro with the type of experience that no rookie before him has had. You think about the setup at Bethpage and how far Luke drives the golf ball, how prolific he drives the golf ball, his ball striking. I happen to believe, too, that he'll get on tour and be a top 30, top 35 putter right away. I know Akshay Bhatia is a popular pick for a young rookie, Matt McNeely currently inside the top 6. But if it comes down to Luke Clanton and a Wyndham Clark who has struggled outdoors this year, or a Jordan Spieth coming off of injury, at this point, why not? Why not take a chance and set yourself up to the future and put Luke Clanton on the Ryder Cup team?
Brentley just cranking that hype machine to about a 10. I want a U.S. Open now. Come on, hit the showers. Let's get the young stud who's already wrapped up his PGA Tour card as part of that accelerated program. But that gives us something to talk about here on Golf Today. And we're really, guys, as you know, going to ramp up our collegiate golf coverage these next couple months, culminating with the men's and women's NCAA championships. Berko, you're first on the tee with some storylines to keep in mind as we're going to be following them this spring.
Well, you take a look at the women, Stanford, the defending national champion. They've been the standard for the last decade of what Ann Walker has done, three national titles in the last 10 years for the Cardinal. And I caught up with Ann last week. We know Megha Gane, Kelly Sue, two quality juniors, but as Brentley and I and so many others have said, arguably the greatest recruiting class we've ever seen in women's college golf. Four freshmen heading to Palo Alto. They have exceeded expectations. The team chemistry is remarkable. You have four inside the top 15 of the world amateur golf ranking, six inside the top 45, an international flavor that hasn't been seen in years past for Ann Walker. So Stanford is always front and center for so many of us, George, but you've got USC, you've got Oregon, you have South Carolina, you have Arkansas, you have others, at least for the women to contend with. But I know Brentley and I, we always say it starts at Stanford and then it goes from there. But for the men, Brentley, wide open, kind of a different scenario than we have seen in years past for the gentlemen.
All right, Brentley, I'll go to you. We kick off that college coverage this week on the Golf Channel with the Darius Rucker Intercollegiate in Hilton Head. What should we be looking for there?
Yeah, so I happened to be down in Melbourne, Florida a couple of weeks ago for the Moon Golf Invitational, which very similar feel to the Darius Rucker, you know, eight of the top 12 teams, you know, who's who in college golf, non-Stanford division, of course. And there is a player by the name of Ella Galitsky from Thailand, was playing in her first college tournament. She goes out and beats the world's top-ranked amateur, Lottie Woad, in a playoff. So I'm looking for her to continue that hot success in her first semester of college golf. I think her addition to a team of Hannah Darling and Louise Rydquist on this Gamecock squad that has been, I guess for lack of a better word, soft as we've gotten to May on the college golf calendar. I think her addition to the lineup is going to add some much needed toughness. And then also Arkansas, a team that really hasn't been, I would say, amongst the contenders when it's all said and done since Maria Fassi left 6 or 7 years ago. They've been underrated, I think, these last few years. This is the time for them to come out against a tough field and say, hey, we belong as well.
Yeah, you two guys always dialed, covering the college game from A to Z. Berko, Brentley, good to be with you.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.